The chair calls the Education Policy Committee to order for Tuesday, March 24th, 2026. And we have a quorum. We do have a quorum. And representative, we should have our experts do it. They're the best at catching errors. But Representative DePell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes, or would you like to move the approval of the minutes?
Yes, I move the minutes.
All right, Representative DePell moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the minutes for Wednesday, March 18th, 2026 are approved. All right, members, we're going to switch up the order just a little bit here and start with Representative Robbins' bill. Let me get to my correct spot right here. Okay, so the next bill on our agenda is going to be House File 751. And Representative Robbins, thank you so much for joining us today. The chair moves House File 751 before the committee with the intent to be laid over. And the chair moves the DE1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author prefers. As a matter of courtesy, we'll adopt that amendment and then let our author present as amended. So all those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the DE1 is adopted. Representative Robbins, please identify yourself for the record and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill. It comes from a situation in my district. Actually, several years ago now, I've been trying to get this across the finish line for a while, and we had a student in my district who was sexually assaulted at school, and it was near the end of the school year, and the school counselor and the teacher decided, oh, it was close enough to the end of the school year, they didn't have to tell the parents. And this led to the child, you know, being very depressed, but the parents had no idea why. And it was a very sad situation. And then when the child returned to school in the fall, the same thing happened again. And again, the school decided they didn't have to tell the parents. And so finally, the child told her parents, like months into the school year. And then, like, all the stress and anxiety and depression of the last few months started making sense. And they came to me with this proposal for a bill that would require schools to notify parents of adverse incidents as defined in the bill within 24 hours so parents can be part of helping their kids go through these difficult situations. And we did adopt the DE, which changes it from a requirement because we didn't want to, mandate this on schools. Schools have a lot of mandates, and we want to be respectful of our educators. So what the DE does is, rather than under the original bill it was a requirement, now it will be presumed under the language of the DE that the district will notify the parent. And in the language here it says as soon as practicable, but Chair Bennett and I have talked about that we're still going to ask them, it's presumed they will notify the child, the parents, within 24 hours. But we'll deal with that in a later date. Today I just want to get this moving, please, so we can talk later. And if you guys prefer the language of the DE as soon as practical to 24 hours, I'll obviously defer to the will of the committee. But my intention is to try to give some sort of notice to the parents within 24 hours, presuming the district will do it without requiring the district to do it, to be clear, members. So this subsequent to this being brought to my attention several years ago, I've now had another situation in my district that has risen to the same level of concern. And if it's happening in my district, you know, it may be happening in other people's districts, and maybe parents don't even know. And so it's very concerning, and I certainly know that there's well intention in our districts. They want to do right by students and families, but I think perhaps they need a little more guidance in this area for adverse incidents. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And we don't have any testifiers signed up for this bill. Is there any discussion on the bill? No discussion before I well, go ahead. Chair Jordan, I'll let you. I don't see anybody. So, oh, we do have somebody who's, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Green. Missed you.
Thank you so much, Chair Bennett. And thank you, Representative Robbins, for bringing the bill forward. I just have a question. Does this apply to non-public schools as well, or is it just public school districts?
Honestly, I think it applies to public schools, but I can double check.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair. Yes. Would you be open to including non-public schools in this bill?
Yes, I would be open to that conversation.
Thank you.
Representative Green, good to go. Okay. Anybody else? Nope. Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I heard you say it was being laid over. Is that the action? Great. Representative Robbins, can you explain what, like we all know what presumed means, but from a legal perspective, can you explain what that means?
I think
Robbins, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know a legal definition. This was the language suggested to me by the nonpartisan reviser I was working with. So originally in the bill, underlying Bill 751, we have the word requiring. And so they would have been required to do it. And I got feedback from the schools that they would be more likely to support it if it was not a mandate. And so they said if we can just presume that they will do this, that should be sufficient, that the schools will understand it's a strong direction without being an actual requirement.
Chair Jordan, if you'd like, Ms. Pera could clarify that.
Yes, please,
like
Madam Chair.
All right, Ms. Pera.
Chair Bennett, Chair Jordan, and Representative Robbins. So under current law, if you look at the DE amendment on line 1.22, there's some language stricken there. And so current law, there is a presumption that they would notify the parent, but there is also discretion. So the presumption is being carried through to the new language. It's the discretion part that isn't, but the presumption part is the same.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I guess that discretion part, I think, is really the question here. And so I appreciate what Representative Robbins is saying about, you know, this incident that happened at your school, and I understand why you're trying to bring such a bill forward. I do think it needs more work, so I'm glad it's being laid over. I think there are reasons why we might be concerned about a child's welfare. There might be a situation at home that we know that unfortunately our children don't just come to school as blank vessels with perfect home lives. There's a lot of things that happen at school. I do think there are some reasons for administrators to use some discretion here. And so I'm glad that the bill is being laid over to work more on that. I do have concerns about if a child's parents are not supportive of their gender identity, for example, how can we make, and they're being bullied for that. That is an example of something that I think we need to work through. So that presumption part is important, but I think we can also make sure we keep kids safe. So I'm glad it's being laid over. Thank you.
Representative Robbins, any comments?
Thank you, Chair Jordan. Thank you, Ms. Pera. Thank you, Chair Bennett. So I appreciate that, but I think what we have found is that at least in the situation that was brought to my attention, the allowance of discretion caused great harm. And so this is not going as far as I actually would want with a requirement, but it upholds the presumption, but limits the discretion. And I think it's very important for all kids to have their parents involved in you know, whatever they're facing at school, bullying, in this case, incident of sexual harassment. But I think having the parents involved is critical. The school should not have more discretion than a parent in understanding what's best for the child. So I encourage the committee to see this as a middle ground, and I do hope to get your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And before I lay this over, I would like to make a comment as well. I think, you know, getting language correct is obviously what we want to do, but I would agree this is an important subject and probably wider spread than we think. I know in my own district, there was a school where a young man had been bullied a number of times. The notification did not go to his parents, and he ended up committing suicide. So there are ramifications we need to deal with. But thank you for bringing it forward, and hopefully we can work on this, get it right. So at this time, the chair lays over House File 751 as amended. And I believe that's it. So now we will go on to thank you, Chair Robbins. And we will go on to Representative Nadeau at this time with House File 3764. And Representative Nadeau, thank you so much for joining us today. The chair moves House File 3764 before the committee with the intent to be placed on the general register. And the chair also moves the DE1 amendment to be put on the bill in the shape the author prefers. As a matter of courtesy, we'll adopt that amendment and let the author present the bill as amended. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the DE1 is adopted. So Representative Nadeau, please identify yourself for the record and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. This is the anonymous reporting system bill, and I'm going to go through the DE1. I've learned my short time in the legislature that we don't always get what we want, and so sometimes we got to work on trying to get what we can. And this is one of the bills that that we're working on, along with three or four others that we think are going to improve safety in schools. Ultimately, we're going to help reduce gun violence in our communities and in schools. And with that, I will go through this particular bill. What this does is it sets up a local anonymous reporting system. It's optional. I would prefer that it were, you know, a mandate on our schools, but I recognize that there's some challenges with that. It allows districts or charter schools to create their own local anonymous threat reporting systems, and if they do, it creates the framework that allows anonymous reports 24/7 through an app and multilingual crisis center. It uses crisis center staff by trained individuals. It quickly sends information to a school-based team that I'll talk about in a second. It enables coordinated responses with schools, 911, telecommunication, and law enforcement when needed for safety. It trains a school-based team in each school to handle those reports, provides public awareness and education before school launches, evidence-based violent prevention training to students, and it follows state and federal student data privacy laws. The additional requirements, providers can also create an educational website and a toll-free hotline for anonymous tips. Every school with a system will have to have at least 3 employees that are trained to receive and respond to these reports. Much like the previous bill, this one, Representative Green, it does not require non-public schools to participate. I am very open to, adding them to this, but it allows them to implement a system if they choose, but they're not required to follow all of the requirements that this bill puts in statute. The reporting, districts and charters need to tell the Department of Ed whether they use a local system, who provides it, the contact info for the school-based teams, the number and types of reports, including false reports, whether families and community members were informed about the statewide system. If the district doesn't create its own system, this bill encourages them to share information about the Department of Public Safety's statewide anonymous reporting system on their website, in handbooks, and in annual notices. It requires the Minnesota Department of Education to publish a list of approved third-party anonymous reporting system providers, and that is to be done by September 1st of 2027. And on by January 15th of 29 and annually thereafter, the Department of Ed needs to create a report to the legislature on the total statewide reports received through these local systems and detailed data on the report types, reporting methods, and the false reports. Districts may accept public or private funds to support a reporting system as long as the requirements are still met. And in this bill, it requires MDE to use existing resource to carry out its duties. The only thing I'm going to add before I ask for testifiers is that most of you probably know that this builds on current law. Currently under, you know, Minnesota Statute 121A.038, Subdivision 7, this really builds on what we already have in law, gives it some framework to move forward. And with that, I would like to have my testifiers.
Thank you. And members, I just want to remind you, included in your folders are several letters of testimony on this bill, but we do have some testifiers joining us. As Chris Lindquist and Alexandra Fitzsimmons come up, I would just like to remind the testifiers, when it's your turn, to state your name for the record and keep your comments to around 2 minutes, please, just to keep it moving. But thank you so much. Welcome to our committee, and we'll start with Chris Lindquist.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, Chair Jordan, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Chris Lindquist, and I am in my fifth year as the Director of Community Education for St. Francis Area Schools. This is my 25th year in education overall, and the last 19 being in St. Francis. I'm here today to express our district's strong support for House File 3764. On a recent trip to visit my son overseas, I was reminded as I drove by the airport to see something and say something. In St. Francis, we believe that a simple mantra shouldn't just apply to a national security, it should be a foundation pillar of school safety. Since the 2023-2024 school year, we have partnered with the Sandy Hook Promise to provide the Say Something Anonymous Reporting System, also referred to as the ARS, Anonymous Reporting System for short. This isn't just a tip line, it is a culture of safety that we're building. Each year we provide comprehensive training to the entire secondary population, which is around 2,000 students in St. Francis, grades 6 through 12. This is reinforced by student-led Save Promise Clubs, which empower the students themselves to lead the charge in looking out for one another. Before this, our high school had tried several DIY solutions, like dedicated office phone lines or a Google form, and these were problematic. They required constant manual monitoring and created significant liability for staff. As I told WCCO News during their recent segment at our middle school, many of our critical life safety tips don't come during the school day. They come during non-school hours or even at 2 a.m. when a student is in crisis and feels that they have nowhere else to turn. House File 3764 ensures that every student in Minnesota has access to the same 24/7, 365 triage that we use, where tips go to a trained crisis counselor, not a staff member's unattended inbox. In just 3 years, I've personally witnessed this program save lives in our district. The data is there to back this up. Recent research published in Pediatrics in the Journal of Injury Prevention analyzed 18,000 tips from North Carolina's statewide system. They found that while one in 10 tips involved firearms, the vast majority involved bullying, cyberbullying, and mental health crises. In that one state alone, this system led to over 1,000 mental health interventions and over 100 quote-unquote saves where a suicide was imminent and averted. Personally, we have had tips come in, dispatch law enforcement to homes, and the parents are shocked because they were not aware their own child was in crisis. This program has worked in our district. By supporting House File 3764, you are providing a proven, transparent framework that supports students without increasing the criminalization of school discipline. You are giving students the permission to be part of the solution. In St. Francis, we have seen that when you give students a safe way to say something, they do, and it keeps our community whole. I urge you to support House File 3764. Thank you.
Thank you. And to our next testifier, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Senior Policy Director with Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in strong support of House File 3764. Policies that prevent violence and create pathways for early intervention are essential to protecting Minnesota children, and this bill represents an important step toward that goal. A child's sense of safety is foundational to their health and well-being. It shapes their ability to explore, engage in the classroom, build relationships, and develop confidence. When violence enters places where children should feel protected, it does more than cause immediate harm. It disrupts the stability children need to grow and thrive, especially in their schools. This bill is about acting before harm occurs. By encouraging schools to implement or promote a comprehensive 24/7 anonymous reporting system with trained crisis response and school-based teams, it gives students a safe, trusted way to speak up and helps ensure adults can respond before a situation escalates. Importantly, this bill also helps ensure that students are taught how to recognize warning signs and seek help. This is not just about safety, it's about well-being. It's about creating environments where children feel secure enough to ask for help and confident that someone will listen and follow through. These provisions matter because we know the reality. Warning signs are often present before violence occurs, and young people are often the first to see them. Research shows that most school attackers share or leak their plans beforehand, frequently to peers. Yet too often those signals go unreported because students are afraid, unsure, or don't know where to turn for help. Representative Nadeau's bill directly addresses that gap. In Minnesota, we have seen the devastating consequences when warning signs are overlooked. Communities across our state continue to carry the trauma of violence in places that should be safe for our children. Several moms and dads from the Annunciation community submitted letters in support of this bill, underscoring just how urgent and real this need is for all of our children. We must not wait for another tragedy to act. Anonymous reporting systems are not a standalone solution to gun violence or school safety challenges, but they are an essential one. House File 3764 reflects what research and lived experience tell us. The moments before a crisis are where prevention is possible. Minnesota children deserve to feel safe enough to speak up and to know someone will respond. We urge you to support this bill. Thank you for your commitment to Minnesota children.
Thank you for your testimony. And if we can get two more testifiers to come up, we have Tess Rada, sorry if I mispronounce your name, and Rick Kaufman. If those two could come up here. And maybe we just have one more. That's okay. We will start with Rick. Is it Kaufman?
Kaufman.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the work on this bill. I was here a couple weeks ago talking about the anonymous reporting. As the chair said, I'm Rick Kaufman, Executive Director of Community Relations and Emergency Management for Bloomington Public Schools. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and the Minnesota School Boards Association. Like the two previous speakers, I want to share that we support this bill. Anonymous reporting systems are one of the most effective tools we have to prevent violence. But it's important to note that their success does not depend on technology alone. The critical question is what happens after that tip is submitted, who receives it, how it is evaluated, and how quickly it reaches those responsible for responding. I have 33 years working in crisis response, crisis preparation, and behavioral threat detection and assessment with schools across the country. As amended, the bill's language does encourage districts to implement those local systems. But what's missing is as I noted at a Senate hearing this morning, in a companion bill, that the requirements after the bill currently says it's encouraged, but when you get into the language, it has requirements tied to those systems. That creates ambiguity and questions of clarity for school districts. We support Minnesota's existing state-managed system that's operated by the BCA. However, also as reflected in this bill and as I testified before, it does not require immediate coordination notification to school officials. Law enforcement may be notified, but school officials are not guaranteed to receive information in real time. And that is a critical omission. Most tips, as you've heard, are not criminal. They involve bullying, mental health concerns, suicidal ideation, or students in distress. These are prevention issues. They are not necessarily law enforcement issues. So if that information does not reach those trained to assess that behavior and activate threat assessment teams, we lose the ability and the opportunity to intervene at a critical time. So we do appreciate the revisions that have been made since the original language was introduced. However, it does not yet establish those clear standards for those school districts that will create their own internal systems, unlike the Sandy Hook Promise system that already has those pieces in place. So we ask for those clear standards to be part of the bill for threat evaluation, prioritization, or coordination between reporting systems, schools, and law enforcement. A strengthened statewide model would ensure one clear, trusted way to report concerns anywhere in the state. It would also reduce inequalities between districts, providing shared infrastructure, trained personnel, and consistent response protocols. Finally, I know this year there's not a lot of money, if any, to give to schools, but school districts cannot absorb this responsibility without funding for staffing, training, especially training for implementation of behavioral threat assessment. If we get this right, we give schools the best chance to intervene. If not, we simply have a system that collects information but fails for school districts to act on it. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Adosh Uni. Mr. Uni, whenever you're ready, just go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. I just want to state that the department, we agree that an anonymous reporting system would be an important resource for the state, and these systems can empower students, staff, and families to report potential threats of violence. We also know it's important to have data on the utilization of these reporting systems to evaluate effectiveness as well as analyze any adverse impacts, such as on a particular student group. This transparency takes rigorous data collection and reporting. And from other states' experiences, we've found that one of the most critical factors in ensuring success is having a well-resourced framework, which includes resources to execute the data collection and reporting to evaluate overall effectiveness. While the amendment does not currently account for costs associated with adopting the data collection reporting system itself, and asks MDE to absorb the cost, it is our hope that the House would still consider resources to effectively implement this system and MDE's responsibilities. When MDE collects data, we have responsibilities to ensure that the data is reported with fidelity and aligned with best data validation practices. Before any reporting can occur, MDE must design and build a standardized collection process and the corresponding technical infrastructure. And this includes creating the data submission method or platform, incorporating safeguards for non-public student information under FERPA, and ensuring that the system can support consistent and reliable reporting across districts and charters. Because the bill allows districts and charters to self-select the reporting system they would use, MDE would not receive the data in a standardized format with data that can be validated on its face. Ensuring consistency across multiple systems would require staff time to align data, flag discrepancies, and check for potential issues such as accidental inclusion of personally identifiable information. In addition to this, system development, there are also startup and ongoing costs associated with training and communicating with LEAs on the new reporting requirements to make sure that we get the data that needs to be sent in so that the effectiveness can be evaluated correctly. That being said, we have gone back to the team and tried to identify a no-cost option for this data collection reporting expectation. MDE could simply collect whether an LEA has a system and if it were a local model or BCA, or the BCA one. The data, however, would be fairly limited utility and validation without resources to provide the system I detailed. Again, I would like to emphasize MDE does support the value of pursuing an anonymous threat reporting system framework for the state, but we strongly believe that resources are required to have a valid, effective, and reliable system. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And before we go to member discussion, I'd like to make a couple points, I think mostly about the funding issue. But first I'll go back to when we first heard this bill on February 25th, Representative Ray Rauer's bill with the DE amendment that was going to, or without the DE amendment at that time, I guess. And we did not hear these concerns. And I've talked with the department about that. I get parts of it. It's a tough one. But that's what these hearings are for, and so that does concern me. Representative, and by the way, I was ready to, we worked with Representative Ray Rauer, she actually worked with us, came up with this DE amendment, and felt like it was good to go. And that was, I wanted to support her bill with that amendment. So that didn't go through, so Representative, or wasn't brought forward, that's why we're hearing Representative Nadeau's bill, who had a similar bill, and now that same DE amendment. But I'd like to push back respectfully, Mr. Uni, and to the department on the funding issue. And I will say, first of all, that I really do appreciate the Minnesota Department of Education, because we would not be able to do our work without them. And they can't do their work without us either. It's a partnership. It's a true partnership. And so when we direct you to do the things, then the executive branch through the department takes our legislation and puts it to work. And that is much appreciated. But I want to say something about the funding issue, funding a report. And I get it if there's a, if we're starting a significant new program that has a lot of new FTEs within that kind of thing, obviously we're going to have to add funding. But for a report, I just want to bring up some points. So bear with me for a few minutes, members, if you would. I just would like to say the amount of funding right now that the Department of Education gets. And so general fund appropriation for FY 28 is more than $63 million, and that does not include the federal dollars that come in. MDE's current biennial budget includes a carry forward of $8 million from the previous biennial budget. And then I'll just give an example of the EDI Center. That's formerly known as the School Climate Center. So that was previously funded with a dedicated rider providing $2 million per year. And in 2025, last year, that rider, or the mandate that we gave the department, was repealed, but the department was able to keep the $2 million. So during testimony to the Education Finance Committee, which I'm part of also, this session, MDE said they still have the EDI Center, which provides several functions. But the thing is, each of those functions are, they have a separate funding stream going to them. I'm going to list some of those. Part of the functions we heard of the EDI Center are school mental health services. $150,000 a year is provided separately for that through the legislature. School health services, $150,000 per year is provided separately for that function. Non-exclusionary discipline grants, $88,000 per year. General neutral restroom grants, $75,000 per year. I believe that's for the administration of it. Recovery program grants, $23,000 per year. Student support personnel pipeline grants, $150,000 per year. This is to administrate. Achievement and integration program, $1.57 million per year. Full service community school grants to administrate those, $150,000 per year. So many of the parts of that EDI center are already separately funded, and yet this $2 million is still there. You can combine this to at least $2.3 million per year in funding that they receive on top of the $2 million previously earmarked for the EDI center. And based on MDE's testimony in Ed Finance, this center was funded with more than $4.3 million. So my concern is it's time that we push back, sorry, a little bit, and say there are some things like a report that should be funded without asking for extra dollars. There's also specific funding MDE receives, $720,000 per year to implement the LEAPS Act, which was passed in 2013. It's been 12 years now. I'm assuming that that has been implemented, and yet that money is still there. $150,000 for the Ethnic Studies Administration to administrate that, but we don't give extra funding for math, science, or social studies. $175,000 per year to administrate reimbursements for the unemployment insurance aid, and that fund will likely be empty after 2027. But that's in the base budget. They'll continue to get $175,000. I think you get the idea that there's a lot of money, and I know you do a lot of things in the department, but I think when we're asking for a report to be done, this, we need to push back on this. In our current budget, the governor has proposed a $250 million cut to special ed, overseen by the Blue Ribbon Commission. And right at the end, kind of the 11th hour last year, the department pushed to get $150,000 to administer a commission to produce cuts that nobody wants to see. So we're literally paying to have the department cut funding for our schools. So at some point, I believe it's time to say no to the agencies and push back and say, as a legislature, we're asking you to fund this within current funds, which is what this bill does. And also at some point, there are current law, 120A.02, the Department of Ed I'm going to read this quote. It's part of the department's mission that within the department's resources, the commissioner shall endeavor to, among other things, use innovative fiscal and human resources practices to manage the state's resources and operate the department as efficiently as possible. So that's a directive in statute. So I'm sorry to kind of bore you with all the figures, but I'm really adamant about this. I think it's an important bill. I think we can ask the department to do a report within its current funding. And I'm going to end it right there, and I'll allow other members to now tear apart what I just said. So there you go. Members, do we have any questions or comments? We have Representative Lawrence.
Chair Bennett, thank you very much, and thank you for your comments that you just made. I appreciate that. And I want to thank Representative Nadeau for this bill. I think one of the things I appreciate most about this bill is it's not a mandate. I continue to hear from my schools over and over again in my district that the 65 mandates are challenging. Unfunded mandates, very challenging, and not that they won't implement them, but they're extremely challenging on the budgetary and finding the resources and the people to put into those plates. So thank you that this is encouraged, that you've laid out the steps for schools to follow and to encourage to go by, right? And so I appreciate that factor of this bill more so than anything else. In addition to that, I want to thank Mr. Lindquist from St. Francis. School in my district. We just heard from couple students in our last committee from students in St. Francis as well, so it's nice to come into this room here as well. But hats off to the school board, to the teachers, to those individuals in the St. Francis district that saw a need and acted. They figured out what needed to be in, and they stepped out without the state legislature coming alongside to put parameters or things that do it, but they saw the need for their district and acted. And I'm thrilled, and the same thing that testified over at the other committee today is they're moving ahead in things without the direction of us as state representatives. And that's encouraging to see because I'm a local individual representative. I like local control, like people to react to the needs of their district and their schools first and foremost. And so I appreciate those couple factors today. With that, Madam Chair, I don't have any specific question at this point in time, but I would like to call for a roll call.
Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. Appreciate that. And thank you, Representative Nadeau, for bringing this, to the committee and having it be heard. You know, I was very well-spoken last week about, the department's pushback on this. And I just have a question for Mr. Uni, if he'd be willing to. With the numbers that Chair Bennett had brought up and an $8 million carryover from last year's budget, just curious if Mr. Uni feels that there's a higher priority need for that spending outside of, other than school safety.
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, Representative Roach, I think one of the limitations we have, even with funding that's carried over, much of that is grant funding. That may have been encumbered, wasn't expended. There may be some operational funding that we had carried over because of FTEs, or in some areas, like the EDI Center, we did have some spend down of COVID area funding where then we were able to carry over funding within our statutory limitations. Normally, we're able to carry over funding from for 1 year or within the biennium. The limitations we have are that the funding that we were given, a vast majority of it does have limitations on it, many of which Chair Bennett mentioned. on what it can be used for. So the administrative funding that we get for any particular program, like administration of LEAPS, administration of unemployment insurance, administration of any particular grant program, it's not just for the program area, but it's also we hire all of our grant specialists through that administrative funding, has to be used for those individual purposes. So it's not that we are picking and choosing to prioritize one program that we've been given funding for over school safety, of which the EDI Center does have a lot of focus on school safety. It's that we're statutorily required to expend the money in those areas.
Representative Roach, follow up?
Follow up is just, listen, we have put immense pressure on school districts to make, you know, incredible cuts. And they've had to navigate that with diligence, and they've had a lot of pressure put on them by the community to make cuts to our school districts, and have had a lot of challenges brought forward to them, and tough decisions, some of which came in the forms of levy and property tax rises on their constituents. And I don't feel like it's out of bounds to require the MDE to make the necessary cuts and adjustments that maybe make them uncomfortable, to make sure that we're there, you know, doing their duty to file a report and make sure that we can get this passed. So, thanks.
Mr. Uni, any response?
No, I understand. I mean, I think I would just like to emphasize that a lot of the proposals that are put forward, we support the mission. It's just recognizing that to do the work effectively, we do need dedicated funding for that. And with the resources that we have, almost all the time are statutorily directed. We do have operating funds that are general that we have already assigned to other programs that we know that we have to take care of statutorily, like overseeing academic standards, where we don't have dedicated funding. To the statute that you brought up, Chair, I will just mention one example of how we are creative, is that we do, and I'm sure other agencies do this, is that when we don't have enough operating funds to fully pay staff salaries and benefits, we do pay at a prorated rate every single year. I think since I've been there, I think salaries have been paid at a 97 or 95 or even lower percentage on an annual basis. It is caught up with in prior years. But I do believe that the department has tried to meet at least that one example, that statute that you mentioned around being creative or innovative around managing the finances of the agency.
Thank you. Representative Roach, any follow-up? You're good. And I have another member, but I just want to add one thing. The reason I brought up those dedicated funding amounts under the EDI Center is because the $2 million, which is unrestrained funding, if that's proper term, was still given to the department. So my point being, why not use some of that $2 million? But I'm going to go on to Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Bennett. And thank you, Representative Nadeau, for bringing the bill forward. I don't necessarily have any questions. I just wanted to make a couple comments. So there is no doubt the anonymous reporting system is super effective. There are districts across our state right now that are using it that are really doing a lot of really good work. And so I just want to start by saying that. I think, Chair Bennett, your explanation of all the numbers that you gave, even though this is the Ed Policy Committee, that is, in my opinion, why a bill like this has to go through and get vetted from to Education Finance. That's what we do in there to make sure there aren't any hidden costs. And so we had another bill. This is like the third bill that I have seen on anonymous reporting. We had Representative Rewowers, Representative Ream also has a bill. She worked with Sandy Hook Promise. So my hope would be that we could combine the bills and have a conversation and have it vetted the proper way. The other piece is that I think one of my concerns is I think the BCA and having an anonymous tip line that doesn't cost anything, I think that's a great resource for sometimes. But I am also really concerned, and this we heard this from Sandy Hook Promise when they came and presented to us, the wraparound services around that. What does that mean? So if you have a student that's going into the tip line, they're immediately calling law enforcement. Where's then the circle back with the supports around the school? And so I just think we have to be really intentional about how we do this work and make sure that what we're putting forward is the absolute best for all students. So it's tough because I wish this bill was going to Ed Finance where it should be going.
So Chair Jordan, do you have some final comments?
Yes, I have quite a few, actually, and some questions. And I guess I would just really highlight what Representative Green just said about, I think, Madam Chair, you and your members have laid out an excellent point for why this bill must go to Ed Finance. By talking about all of these different things, that is the appropriate committee to talk about all of this. We are a policy committee, and I think we would be having a very different discussion if the motion was to move this bill to Ed Finance instead of to the General Register. A move to the General Register says this is a good bill in the shape that it should become law. And just to rip this Band-Aid right off, this is not a bill at this point that should become law. So I have some questions for Mr. Ooney. My understanding in reading the DE, and we are looking at the DE, not the underlying bill, which I think is a good bill for several reasons. And I think what we have done with this DE is removed all of the, like, if you look at what we omitted from 3764, like, it's all of that data that we would use, that wraparound that Representative Green was talking about to identify students. It also talks about what Mr. Kaufman was talking about with the coordination availability. So, Mr. Ooney, in reading this, taking out that funding, setting that funding aspect aside, what is the deliverable of this? Is this going to have more schools in this? Like, what is the, you talked about a pared-down report. So the way I would read it is that report is just going to be the name of a school, and it's going to say BCA, other, or no.
Mr. Ooney.
What's the report going to look like in as this language is as amended?
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, Chair Jordan, if we were to implement the DE as written, it would have the elements that are in there about the type of reports received. I'm just reading off the DE, the number of false reports received, the method by which the report was received, and I believe what system the LEA chose who opted into it. The no cost option that we had is just simply, did you choose it? And then did you choose a local and a BCA? I still think, you know, again, as I mentioned, without the funding, we would be challenged to have an integrated data collection reporting system where we would have a validated system, we'd have the privacy checks, we'd be able to link it up with all of our other data systems so that researchers and the department could do rigorous analysis and evaluation of the true effectiveness of this model and be able to translate it into helping uptake going into the future. So I think currently it would be limited, and the no cost option that we've discussed would have limited utility in evaluating the effectiveness.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then Representative Ooney, I know Mr. Ooney.
Take my title.
You can have mine.
Madam Chair, I've received that title at various stages.
Have any other states that have an anonymous threat reporting, do any of them have a system like the one that would be established under House File 3764 as amended?
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, I'm sure I can provide more detail on what other states have, but what I've seen is that the states that have been most effective at being able to implement this system, especially as it pertains to the evaluating the effectiveness afterwards, have had resources to be able to support rigorous data collection and reporting. That has been able to inform improvements that they've needed, as well as evaluation of how it's going and if there's tweaks needed going forward. But they've had the resources there, or they've already had a very well-resourced data system that could port that in. So something that we are growing our data system, but we're just not there yet.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just to be clear, this bill would not really change anything in terms of if schools adopt an anonymous threat reporting system, because it's encourage instead of must, which was in the underlying bill language. So just as we encourage schools under Aaron's law to teach consent education, that doesn't mean that every school does it. So there would still be school. It would be up to the school to decide whether or not to engage in an anonymous threat reporting system.
Mr. Ooney.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Chair Jordan, I think with the department's approach for many programs in school safety outside, as we know, the maximum effectiveness we get is when there's a statewide framework, and that when there's consistent implementation across the state, we get consistent access, equitable access around the state to these systems, to these opportunities, and that's where we can see not only greater safety for the most amount of students and staff members, but we also get to see the greatest ability to evaluate the effectiveness. So when, you know, when there is an anchorage, we don't get to see those maximum results we would see from a statewide implementation or opportunity.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think everyone in this committee agrees that anonymous threat reporting systems are a necessary and important tool to keeping our kids safe. That's why we started this conversation back in February. That's why we invited Sandy Hook Promise to come and testify and talk about these. And that's one thing we learned from both Mr. Kaufman continuously and from our testifiers previously is that we need to do this process correctly. And this language is not that with the DE is not ready to proceed. I think it could proceed to education finance. And so I would make a motion to move this bill to education finance.
Chair Jordan makes a motion to move.
And I would ask for a roll call.
And roll call has been requested. So Chair Jordan makes a motion to move House File 3764.
What's that?
To
think what?
Education finance. So we have member discussion now, right? And I can speak to that as well. I'll just say, I guess I'll add some points right now to this situation. So the language in this bill as amended makes it very clear that the Department of Education must use existing funds to accomplish this report. So that's one of the reasons why we're not moving it to Ed Finance, because they're being told by the legislature to use existing funding. And in conversations with MDE, they've expressed concerns about writing a report beginning in 2029. And if there is a cost associated with the report, the language of the bill makes it clear that MDE needs to absorb that cost. Therefore, there is no fiscal cost right now for the legislature to cover. We have directed them as a legislature, which is our authority, to absorb those costs. So I guess I believe the bill should go to the general register. I feel like, obviously, we'd all like to say, yes, all schools should do this, but at this point, schools are overwhelmed with mandates. Why not allow the schools to opt in who want to? Then they do have requirements if they opt in, but they don't have to opt in yet. That's a point I guess I would make. And you've requested a roll call. I know Chair Jordan, do we allow more comments here or just? Do we have other? It's a debatable motion, so or shall we move to the vote? Okay, let's move on to a roll call vote. And my legislative assistant will take the roll call.
Chair Bennett?
Aye.
No. No, sorry. Oh. I had to turn my thing up. So. No.
Chair Jordan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Vice Chair Hill?
Hill votes yes.
Representative Bierman?
Bierman, yes.
Representative DePell?
No.
Representative Falconer?
Yes.
Representative Fogelman?
No.
Representative Gordon?
No.
Representative Gottfried?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, yes.
Representative Lawrence?
Representative Lawrence votes no.
Representative Roach?
No.
There being 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion to move to Ed Finance is not adopted. Does not prevail, I'm sorry. All right, so now we go on to, are we ready for the, any more comments here?
Yes, Madam
Chair. Jordan.
Thank you. And so just to reiterate, we know that this bill will have a fiscal impact. We just heard that from MDE, and asking MDE to absorb that cost doesn't make it go away. Representative Ray Rauer worked really hard. We wanted this to go forward last week, but she heard from MDE and the BCA that they had language concerns with this bill as written. So it's the kind of bill that needs more work. And sending it to the general register kills progress on this bill, even if it's not the right way to do so. And in this committee, the DFL has brought forward multiple pieces of legislation to improve school and student safety. And those proposals were voted down by the GOP. And this is the first time the GOP has brought forward a bill on school safety to this committee. It's It's an interesting effort to do so at the last minute when the language is ready, and we've heard that this language isn't ready. This needs to be a priority. This needs to be something that we can continue to work on, but sending it to the general register is not the way to do it, and that's why I recommend that members vote no on this motion. Thank you.
Okay, and Chair Jordan, I'm going to apologize to you because I missed Representative Roach, so I will give you another opportunity if you would like, but I'm going to let Representative Roach say something, and then I'll come back if you'd like to.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. I appreciate, again, like I said, Representative Du bringing this forward. This provides school districts flexibility, provides them an option to opt in. It's unfortunate that we some members in this committee feel like they can make school districts do something, but not a department that works for the legislature and for the people do something. To sit here and say that the GOP hasn't brought forward, bills for safety, this was something that was worked on together in collaboration. And unfortunately, we have one side of the aisle that wants to protect a department instead of work for the kids and the safety of kids. So to sit here and say that is disingenuous and incredibly frustrating that we're going to let a state agency that has millions of dollars at their disposal dictate what goes on moving forward is a travesty.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Representative Jordan, would you follow up on that?
Yeah, I would. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, just to be clear, Chair Rehrauer has been working really hard on this with Chair Bennett, and, she's very grateful for this. She sent me an email, and she says, I met with both of these departments, not just MDE, and they had really good, detailed questions about data collection, and it made me realize that the bill is not ready yet. And I need more time to put together a really good bill and make sure that stakeholder engagement is done across all of those parties. So to get to that public safety bill that we all want, we need to do that work. That work can be done in the committee process. It's our last week of committee. It's not everyone's. So we could do that, but instead we're sending the bill to the general register, and I would still encourage members to vote no.
Thank you. And before I hand this off to Representative Nadeau for final comments, I would like to make a final comment as well. And I know we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one, I get that, and that's okay. I am I'm really disappointed because I feel like the goalpost keeps moving with this bill, and I don't understand that. Instead of just giving schools this option to at least make a step. And sometimes we just need to do that as a legislature, let them make a step. The other issue I'll make is something Representative Roach brought up, but we constantly, as a legislature, require school districts to develop reports and send them to us or to MDE. I mean, I can't say how many times we've done that, and we don't give them extra funding very often for that. We just expect them to do it. And sometimes it's quite elaborate, and many other mandates as well. So I personally still would like to push back on this and say we need to sometimes mandate things to the department that, they would probably rather not do either, but I think we should do that as a legislature. So, Representative Nadeau, you have some final comments before we vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I just want to reiterate, I don't know what kind of debate went on here with Representative Rehrauer's bill. I've been working on this since last June, with Sandy Hook. I wasn't allowed to carry that first bill. So the fact that I get to be in front of you today, I'm happy about this because it's been an issue that I've worked on since last June. I haven't heard any comments from BCA. I've heard comments from MDE that say they don't want to pay for it. It's a big report. This isn't a reporting bill, members. This isn't a reporting bill. This bill is about anonymous reporting. This is about connecting kids in crisis early. It's about preventing suicide. It's about preventing bullying. That's what this bill is about. Whatever games we want to play, that's fine. But that's not what this bill is about. You say that this bill isn't ready. No bill is ready. I don't have a problem standing here and saying, agency? You need to aggregate data and provide it to the legislature. This is data that is required if a school opts in, if they opt in. There's requirements that they have to submit data to the Department of Education. And then the Department of Education has to aggregate that data and report it to the legislature. This is not a big lift. And as Representative Roach said and Representative Bennett and all of us know, we impose reports on counties. We impose mandates on school districts, watershed management districts, every day of the week. But all of a sudden now, because it's the I don't do a lot of work with the Department of Ed. Most of mine is with Health and Human Services. But this is not an egregious lift at all. And we don't need to look at other states to find where there's success. We can look to our own state. We can look at St. Francis. We can look in Bloomington. And it's, we just can't, we have to stop letting the perfect get in the way of the good. This is a good bill. Everyone here agrees that this is a good idea. Let's work together. I get it. Maybe you don't want to vote for it for whatever reason because you feel like you should go to education, finance, but let's stop this. This is a good bill, members. I ask for your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. So the chair renews the motion that House File 3764 as amended be placed on the general register. We have a roll call requested. The committee legislative assistant will call the roll.
Okay. Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Chair Jordan.
No.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Vice Chair Hill.
Hill votes no.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative DePell.
Yes.
Representative Falconer.
No.
Representative Fogelman.
Yes.
Representative Gordon.
Yes.
Representative Godfrey.
Nope.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Keeler.
Keeler, no.
Representative Lawrence.
Lawrence, aye.
Representative Roach.
Yes.
All right, we have our totals here. We have 7 ayes and 7 nays. There being fewer than 8 ayes necessary for the motion to carry, the motion does not prevail. With that, the chair lays over House File 3764 as amended. Representative Nadeau, thank you. Members, thank you for the robust conversation. And we will move on to our next bill. We have House File 1490 next up on the agenda. This is actually one of my vehicle bills. I'm going to have Representative Mueller step up. We're going to have a DE1 amendment that will be attached to this bill. So I'm currently the chief author of the bill, but that will be changed. It's actually in the motions of being changed to Representative Mueller as this bill proceeds. So we'll let her get settled in. While Representative Mueller gets settled in, the chair will move House File 1490 before the committee for consideration to be placed on the general register. Oh, we're going to lay it over. I'm sorry. So I'm going to say that again. House File 1490 has come before the committee, and it will be laid over after our work here. So we have a DE1 amendment that was worked on by Representative Mueller. This is actually my DE1 amendment. Representative Mueller, thank you for your work on it. She'll explain that when she presents the bill. However, I'm going to ask for a courtesy to adopt the DE1 amendment as the author's amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The DE1 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Mueller, please present the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for a moment to talk about some of the necessary changes for the READ Act. I will tell you that as a member of the READ Act coalition that's brought together with Senator May Quaid, that I had a conversation with them and all of the stakeholder groups a couple Fridays ago about the bill that is being brought forth in the other body. And so what I worked together with Representative Clardy and Representative Vernig about what would be a House position for the any changes that we would need to do with the READ Act. And one of the things that I'll just go through a couple of the provisions in here The first section for subdivision 7 is changes to the literary specialist. And what we found was, and we heard it from Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham, is that when they were looking at the literacy network, regional center network and the literacy networks, was that they would get together the literary specialist, and they found that because of maybe some misunderstanding or lack of requirements of what was a literary specialist, that there were some people that were being designated as literary specialists that weren't actually qualified to be literary specialists. It's a difference to be a literacy lead and versus a literary specialist. And when I talked to Representative Clardy on this, both of us agreed that once PELSBY completes their rules making on the reading specialist endorsement certification, that that should be the baseline for being a literary specialist. In section 2, you'll see that there is some language on 2.1 through 2.3 that has been taken out. This is 1.24 through 2.3, excuse me. This is language that was brought to me by the Dyslexia Coalition, and they were asking for that to be taken out. And then we are also, and on 2.20, this is language about a clarification of a mandate that was already there. This isn't a new mandate. This is just clarifying what this screening needs to look like. And then in 3.4 through 3.7, this is language that we're first attempting to look like when there is a student who is also EL, or DL, or dual language or multilingual. When we talk about screening for dyslexia, we want to make sure that the dyslexia screening is not something that's going to say, hey, we need to keep looking at you, and is it really dyslexia, or do they still need to learn English? Those are the things that we're trying to do in this language. The language that was originally in the screener is that in the Senate language, and the other body had some specific language about access, and that test is going away, and so we're trying to just have some general language there that says, hey, districts, you need to determine, is this person struggling with language learning, or does this person actually have dyslexia markers that we need to look for? And then in 3.24 through 3.26, this is language about parent notification as we look at those who are continually to be screened, grades 4 through 12, that we need to make sure that the parents are being notified. And finally, as we are looking at the very end of this in section 5, subdivision 5, which is on page 6, this is the ongoing review of literacy materials. This is language that is really important for curriculum that is continuing to update, and especially as they continue to want to be highly aligned. The department had talked about how they want to be able to contract or use third party or higher education, and I wanted some more special language or comfort language around that. What does that look like? What does it mean for you to contract with someone else? What kind of process do you have to go through in order to do that? And so that language there talks about how they have to go through the normal RFP process to make sure that we understand who they're partnering with and all of those things. It does say they have to go through the procedures under 16C, and that if they don't get their things done by, I think it was in June. Oh no, okay. So anyway, those are the changes specifically there. The only mistake that we found, and I'm going to have Ms. Parra just explain the one drafting error that we found.
Ms. Parra.
Chair Bennett, Representative Mueller. Yes, section 4 on page 5, line 21, there's a change there allowing districts to extending for a year kind of the permission for districts to use an instructional day for professional development. So they did that in 24-25 and 25-26. This would allow them to do it in 26-27, but there should be a corresponding change on line 533. So where it says 25-26, it should also say and 26-27 school years.
Thank you, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so The reason why this bill is here, and the reason why we're looking at it here, is because, you know, I heard and had been told and also watched in the other body, they shared their Senate version bill and gave the impression that the House members were in support of this bill when that is not the case. And so this is our attempt with Representative Clardy and Representative Vernig to kind of put together a position at this point in time of what are some of the small changes that we need, that we're seeing needs to be worked on. As I have come before you before, we're going to be working on the READ Act until we decide to leave the legislature or until Jesus comes back. So those are things that as we start looking at how this is being implemented, these are some of the changes that we're seeing right now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And we do not have any testifiers signed up. So members, do we have any discussion on this bill? Otherwise, I'll go to Chair. Oh, Representative Keeler.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. And it's just because I'm kind of confused about the way that some of the language reads. So I'll point to where we're at because I know you and I like to look at things. So 2.23. So when we talk about doing things at least once per year, can you just clarify to me that this is school year, calendar year? What is, I just need to make that part make sense. And then I do have one other question.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keeler. Well, now that you say that, now I have that question. Yeah. But so I would read it as a school year. I would read it as a school year.
Representative Keeler.
Thanks. I think we should clarify only because when we've seen this in some other places, it could mean that somebody's getting screened twice in a school year if it's like once per calendar year and then missing an entire school year. So I would just clean that up if we could. And then the other question I have is 5.21. So is this around adding, so I know when we had this conversation before about adding training for our teachers so that they're aligned and it's like 5.5 hours. And so what that is meaning, correct me if I'm wrong, that we're saying that we're having another day out of school for kids, but the teachers need to come in for professional development.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler. I think this language was adopted last time. And yes, I think it means that they get to stay, that they are not in school, but the teachers come in so they can have professional development.
Representative Keeler, follow up?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Thanks for clarifying that. So the problem that I have with this is when that was brought up before, it was told to us that this was only going to be like a one-time, one-year impact. And I said then, this is a problem for me because on the other side of the work that we're doing here, I know you're doing the reading, I'm doing the attendance. This doesn't align because we're already one of the worst in the nation for how many days our kids are in school, and that's impacting us. I mean, it's like we're second worst in the nation. Mm-hmm. And so I argued then that I agree we need to do training for our teachers, but it should not be at the cost of continuously now being one of the worst in the nation for our kids in their seats. And I think part of the conversation that bothers me a little bit is that it's identified like that this is not a cost. And the truth it is a cost, maybe not to schools, but it's a cost to the family members who then need to put their kid somewhere that day, whether it's an education, whether it's a program, like a student has to go to an after school program all day, that costs a significant amount of money to parents. Parents have to take the day off so their kid can stay home. Now that is a cost. And so I think when we like expand it to more school years, I worry that we're just going to keep adding another year to do this and we're just going to continue to stay at the bottom of the barrel for attendance. And so can you talk me through, I guess, how you see that and how we make sure we don't just keep adding another year and another year to support our teachers at the cost of our parents and students?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Keeler. Those concerns are real, and I think it's really important for you to continue to bring up. This language was brought to us by the department, and it was something that as the four of us worked as sorry, the three of us worked together, that it was brought up, hey, can we include this extended timeline? It was a timeline that I think was brought to us by the schools asking for a little bit more time, or by MDE saying, hey, the schools want some more time for this. I would say that I would agree with you that it's really important for us to not continue to extend this. I would also say that there is a possibility, even though it is not a good option, it is an option for them to still have an e-learning day so it can count as a day. As much as I hated teaching e-learning days as a teacher, I know that there has been a way for our schools to be able to continue having school while when the kids are not at the classroom. So I'm writing it on my notes that I can go back to my coalition to here at the House and just be like, hey, what do you think? These are the conversations we have, and we can adopt. I mean, I said we're not adopting this language right now, so it's something we can continue talking about.
Representative Keeler, follow up. Okay. Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. Just I know we're a little bit pressed for time, and Representative Keeler actually asked my question.
Hey.
And so I would just say thank you for working on this. Keep working with the House Coalition and the Senate Coalition. And thank you for your work on this. Glad it's being laid over.
Representative Gutfield, are you okay with, since this is being laid over, I already let Chair, is that okay if we just pass? Thank you. Sorry we missed you there. Chair Jordan, thank you. Representative Mueller.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, members, for your discussion and for your questions about this. As I said, I almost didn't even want to do much of a READ Act bill this year simply because we're trying to let our schools kind of catch their breath from all of this anyway. But as we start hearing some of the questions and some of the other advocates talk about implementation of this, these are just some of the minor changes that we were looking at for right now. But thank you, and I would renew my motion to lay the bill over.
Thank you. Representative Mueller renews her motion to lay House File 1490 over as amended. So done. And now I'm actually going to go to the table and let Representative Mueller take the gavel. And she can also close us out because Chair Jordan has graciously said that I can say my final comments tomorrow. This is my last gavel today, and tomorrow will be our last meeting. So I'm going to let Representative Mueller come.
Thank you, members. Chair Bennett, as you're in place here, Chair Bennett will move House File 3550 before the committee for the consideration to be placed on the general register. Chair Bennett, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, first I'm going to start out by saying I know this is a controversial proposal here and amongst our team members, very differing ideas on how to handle these statewide health standards. But I will say that it is also a very controversial issue at home in my district and throughout our state, because our parents and community members, teachers, administrators are being put at odds with certain portions within the health standards bill. So what this are the health standards that are being imposed on our schools. So during the 2023-24 biennium, the legislature enacted a new mandate statewide health standards for education. Prior to that change, there were no health standards statewide for school districts. It allowed districts to locally adopt their standards for health education. My preference when I introduced the bill last year was to repeal these new health standards because members, again, these standards allowing to proceed are going to mandate issues on schools that are going to create a lot of division that are really meant to be locally developed because of the sensitivity within various communities throughout our state. I believe our schools working within their communities should have the option of choosing to adopt the statewide standards or their own local standards. Instead of repealing, as my attempt last year, I would offer a compromise and say, okay, let's continue with the statewide standards, but allow schools that deem it worthy of their district and therefore their students and their parents to adopt local standards as well. And it's an opt-in then. So we have statewide standards for reading, math, and science. Those make sense. They're appropriate. These standards touch upon health issues and priorities that communities view very differently throughout the state. And what I think about it and what Chair Jordan thinks about it or anybody else here, even in this room, we're going to have very differing opinions on this subject matter, and there should be. So I've had a lot of school employees, parents approach me and say, we don't want these health standards. We want them locally adopted, which is why I'm presenting this bill. It brings that option and it restores some measure of local control that the legislature took away from our schools when they adopted these statewide standards. So I'll stop right there, Madam Chair, and have some discussion.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. Members, we do have some testifiers joining us today. As I call the testifiers forward, I'll remind you to state your name for the record and keep your comments around 2 minutes. We have student testifiers as well, and for our students, it is our custom in this committee that students and minors are not required to provide their last name or their school for the record. You can identify yourself by your first name only. And so I will call our first testifier of Jill Ferris. Ms. Ferris, when you are ready, feel free to get yourself settled there. State your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Jill Ferris. Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett, Co-Chair Jordan, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jill Ferris, as I stated. I served on the Minnesota Health Standards Committee, and I'm also a parent of 2 children in Minnesota public schools. I'm here today because I've heard a concerning claim repeated that public input on the health standards process was ignored or somehow disappeared. I want to be very clear, that is not true. As a member of the committee, I participated in reviewing multiple rounds of public feedback alongside our 40-member team of educators, community partners, parents, and students from across the state. We received thousands of comments. Each one was read, categorized, and considered. When feedback was actionable, we were required to respond and document exactly how it was addressed. It's important to clarify what actionable means. Many comments reflected personal beliefs or general opinions. Those perspectives were heard and respected, but they didn't always result in specific changes to the standards. When specific content-based feedback was provided, the standards changed accordingly. This was a detailed, time-intensive process. It did not happen in isolation or in secret. Public input didn't disappear. It directly shaped standards that you see today. In many cases, language was clarified, strengthened, or revised because of what Minnesotans shared with us. I also want to speak as a parent. Research from the University of Minnesota shows that parents across our state in every congressional district overwhelmingly support accurate age-appropriate health education. It is not controversial. More than 90% of parents support teaching topics like puberty, health education, healthy relationships, and consent in schools. Parents want their children to have accurate, reliable information in order to understand their bodies, build healthy relationships, and make informed decisions. And these standards reflect that. Making these standards optional would undermine the work that the communities have put forward and negate the many public comments from Minnesotans across the state that help shape it. It would mean that access to consistent evidence-based health education could vary depending on where a child lives. But students' needs don't change by zip code, and neither should their access to the knowledge and skills they need to stay healthy and safe. If these standards become optional, they become meaningless, and that is not what Minnesota students or families deserve. These standards represent not just expert input, but public voices of Minnesotans. I urge you to honor that process and the thousands of people who participated in it by maintaining these standards as a consistent expectation for all Minnesota students and voting against House File 3550 today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Ferris. We have 2 students, Kara and Livia. If they would like to join us at the testifying table, please. And once you get settled, Kara, go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can proceed.
Hi, thank you, Co-Chair Bennett, Co-Chair Jordan, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today.
My name is Kara Cowell. I'm a Master's of Public Health student in maternal and child health, a community organizer focused on menstrual health equity, and a board member of Honest Sex Ed Minnesota. I'm here today in opposition to House File 3550. My work focuses on menstrual health education and policy. I regularly encounter students, parents, and other Minnesota adults who were never taught basic information about menstruation, despite it being a normal, recurring biological process. When health education varies by district, foundational knowledge about our bodies becomes unevenly distributed. Stigma and discomfort talking about topics like menstruation should not result in entire districts of students missing out on accurate information about their own bodies. Students across Minnesota will experience puberty and menstruation regardless of where they live. Access to honest, developmentally appropriate health education should not depend on a district-level decision. Optional implementation of these standards would mean that a student's zip code determines whether or not they receive this core health information at all, or if someone's discomfort with a topic means they never learned very important information about their own body. The public health implications of this proposal are also significant. Adolescents age 15 to 19 account for 7% of Minnesota's population, but nearly 24% of chlamydia cases and 13% of gonorrhea cases in 2024. Prevention of sexually transmitted infections and other disease depends on education, and effective education depends on consistency across communities, because infectious disease does not recognize school district borders or what you may or may not have felt comfortable learning in a specific class. We need these standards. Minnesota has already invested time, expertise, and public input in developing them. Making them optional undermines that work and widens disparities in access to essential health information. Students' need for foundational health information does not vary by zip code. Health education should not either. I respectfully ask that you vote no on House File 3550. Thank you.
Ms. Cowell, thank you. You were labeled a student, so, I mean, hey. Hey, it is a compliment. There. Thank you, Ms. Cowell. Livia.
Co-Chair Bennett, Co-Chair Jordan, and members of the committee, my name is Livia Omlung. I am currently a sophomore at Great River School, which is a 1 through 12 Montessori charter school here in St. Paul. I recently started working as a part of Planned Parenthood's Teen Council, which aims to be a reliable source for young people to find information and resources regarding sexual health. Today, I am here to speak against House File 3550 because of my personal experiences with health education as a current high schooler. I went to three different schools throughout middle school. Each one had a vastly different approach to health education curriculum. I found this interesting, as the other classes I took at these schools seemed to have a much more consistent approach. This is a clear effect of the lack of consistent health education standards across the state, which makes health feel less important. I would argue that health class is one of the most important classes for teens, regardless of where they live, because growing bodies, changing hormones, social shifts, and the need for independence all make adolescence so difficult. Now more than ever, with the teen mental health crisis, many statistics showing that young people as a demographic count for half of all total cases regarding sexually transmitted infections, and teens being the most vulnerable to relational violence, it is crucial that we prioritize health as a subject in school for all students. During my time as a teen council member, I have had conversations not only about sex ed, but also all topics which affect teens, such as healthy relationships, substance use, and mental health. During my conversations with peers of many different backgrounds, I consistently observe a trend of misinformation or overall lack of information about health-related topics. One of the questions I ask most commonly to friends and fellow students is, do you feel like you have been provided a good health education? Very few say a firm yes. Teens without a proper health education often have many questions, but not the resources to answer them. Many students resorting to looking on social media for answers. This leads to the spread of misinformation and unrealistic standards, often leading teens to unhealthy relationships with their bodies. If my health class in sixth grade told me what I finally began to understand in ninth, maybe it wouldn't have been so challenging to deal with my hormonal acne or navigate setting healthy boundaries in relationships. Health classes had the power to teach me how to care and love myself, which all teens deserve to know. Yet the curriculum fell short in many places. Understanding myself inside and out throughout the constant changing was not easy to navigate. Among my female peers, this sentiment carries strong. Having state standards would help ensure that Minnesota's students allow all learn the skills and content they need to make informed decisions and take care of themselves and others around them. Students' health and developmental needs do not vary so much between school districts that local standards would benefit them beyond statewide standards that are developed by experts, students, and community members. This bill will not only reduce the chances of students having equal and sufficient health education, but also reduces the chances that youth get the knowledge and skills to stay happy and healthy. So please, for the betterment of health in young Minnesotans, vote against this bill. Thank you.
And thank you, Livia. All right, I have two more testifiers. We have Mr. Uni and Ms. Diedrich. We have 10 minutes left of committee, so let's make sure that we keep our comments brief so we have some time for questions. And Mr. Uni, introduce yourself and your brief testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Jordan and members, Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments on this bill, which would allow schools to essentially opt out of following the forthcoming statewide standards on health. As you heard from our presentation earlier in the session, the state engages in a very rigorous process to adopt statewide academic standards to establish high quality and consistent expectations for what Minnesota students should know and be able to do in each content area. These standards are reviewed and revised every 10 years to reflect current research, expertise, and needs from the field, and go through a rigorous, collaborative, open, and thorough adoption process. In 2024, legislature passed statewide expectations for health standards, and we know that this is because health is a critical content area for students to become well-rounded citizens and set them up for success in life. Just like consistent access and statewide access to healthy meals, we know access to health education will improve student academic outcomes regardless of zip code. And while the proposal doesn't remove statewide health standards entirely, permitting schools and districts to substitute locally determined health standards in place of the required statewide standards would significantly diminish the role and purpose of having consistent statewide standards. We do believe schools design and choose their own curriculum and deliver instruction to meet statewide standards, and they also retain the ability to teach about the currently recommended local health offerings even after the statewide standards are implemented, if they wish to do that above and beyond the statewide standards. We believe this existing flexibility of curricula selection at the local level and delivery methods, and if they choose to, again, teach above and beyond what is required in the statewide standards, that this is an adequate amount of local flexibility to be able to contour to what their local needs are. Having consistent statewide expectations for high-quality health content for all our students, and then pairing that with how local districts will deliver it, I'm only serving to improve the quality of life and well-being of all Minnesotans. We appreciate the committee's time to hear our comments, and as always, I'm standing ready for any questions that they may have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And Ms. Diedrich.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Denise Diedrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3550. For decades, Minnesota has required health as a subject while allowing locally elected school boards to determine the standards and the curriculum based on local community values, culture, and student public health needs. In 2024, that changed when the legislature directed the Department of Health to develop statewide health standards. This bill restores a thoughtful balance to that process. I want to be very clear, it does not eliminate statewide health standards. It does not remove health as a required academic subject. Instead, it allows the local district the flexibility to choose from three different options. They may determine whether to implement statewide health standards. They could continue with locally developed standards that they already have bought in community engagement and support for, or they could choose a combination of both statewide and local standards. Health education is uniquely local. Local boards are accountable at the ballot box. They hold public meetings. They adopt curriculum in open sessions. And it is because they are in this position to build buy-in and trust from the local community. That local ownership matters, particularly in this area of health education. So we urge you to support the flexibility and keep these important decisions in the hands of locally elected boards, staff, and the communities that they represent. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Diedrich. And that's the end that I have for testifiers. Members will move to discussion, knowing that we have about 5 minutes, a little more than 5 minutes left, because I will go to a vote before we adjourn today. And so, as of right now, I have Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair Mueller and Representative Chair Bennett for bringing this forward. I appreciate the opt-in option. I appreciate this, you know, becoming a local control option for our school districts. You know, to Minnesotans that are watching or, you know, will watch in the future, we heard today, as we heard a Minnesota Department of Education tell citizens that they shouldn't, that the department shouldn't have to opt in or shouldn't have to be mandated to do something, but school districts should. That school boards should not have a local voice. That their voice doesn't matter, that the constituents in their districts that vote them in to be a voice for them at their local level don't have a say in their education. This one-size-fits-all, one umbrella, everyone goes underneath it, it does not work. And I know there was talk and testimony that this brought public input. As many people are aware and know that this was, from my knowledge, was an online-only comment. And many people in our districts on this side of the aisle, I'm sure on that side of the aisle, live in rural communities where they don't have access to the Internet. So to suggest that this, you know, was a overarching, welcomed everybody and allowed massive public input, I would push back on that and suggest that it didn't have the voice of everybody, because not everybody had the opportunity to opt into that and to make those comments be heard.
Thank you, Representative Roach. I don't believe, Chair Bennett, I heard a question. Would you like to comment?
I'll just leave it to more discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I have problems with the bill, but a couple things that I guess I just want to say is it's important that our next generation knows and understands what's appropriate and inappropriate. We had a testifier, I believe it was actually with one of your bills, talking about grooming, and we had a young girl sit and talk about that her band director did things inappropriate to her, and she didn't even know that it was wrong. And I think that there's a lot to be said for, you know, educating our kids on knowing what's wrong and right and what adults can and can't do to you. That is something that we need to talk about. I even talk a lot about, like, hugs need consent, and that's just not even something that we talk about. Like, we see adults really be inappropriate with our kids, and to me it's more giving them the tools to know what harm looks like. We know that it becomes a market for sex trafficking when people know that there's communities that don't talk about this, that their youth are more uneducated about the inappropriate acts that can happen and what can and can't be done to you. And I just want to remind us about that one testifier, because she stood out so clear to me, because she talked about she just didn't know. Nobody in her house, nobody in her church, nobody in her little circle was telling her that adults in the way that they were acting with her was inappropriate. And I think that keeping statewide standards in, you know, around this are really, really important. I understand local control, and I'm fine with that. But when it comes to protecting youth from pedophiles and sex trafficking, I think we have to have some standards and some statewide input there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Godfrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward, because I think this is an important discussion. And to build a little bit off of what Representative Keeler was just talking about, I'm going to flip the script a little bit. Young men need to be taught what they can and cannot do to other individuals. And I think this is a conversation that we have lacked in our society for a long time, and that is part of these health standards, is the concept of consent. And I know many of my colleagues that are my age look back at the way that they behaved when they were young adults and think, oh my God, that was sexual assault. And young men need to be taught what that is. so that they know not to do that. And I don't think that is something that should be doled out on a district by district level. No, this is a conversation that we need to have as a society. And so I'm glad that you brought the bill forward so that we can have that honest conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Godfrey. Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair. How much time do I got? I got 2 minutes yet. Chair Bennett, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm glad that you put it on the table for us to discuss. I'm glad you brought it to attention because this is a bill that my district would support. People in my district would want to be involved in the local process of deciding health care for their kids. I shouldn't say health care, the health study that is going to be taught to the students in our schools in our district. They want to be a part of that. This is very important to the people in our district. And we've heard at this table a lot of different discussion and different points of health care, and several people mentioned specific things. It's much more than just some specific points. There's a much more depth to health instruction than bits and pieces here that have been targeted. And I think school boards should be a part of that. I think parents within their district should have a part in that process. And so thank you for bringing this bill forward. I appreciate you being bold to put this on the table today, and I would like to request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested, a roll call granted. Any other member discussion? Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Representative Lawrence's point there that healthcare is so broad. There's a lot of issues to it. And I think that that's all the more reason that we should have a curriculum standard across the state, as we do for all the other subjects. Why would we leave this one blank? It's one of the things that when I first came to the legislature, my first day in ed policy in my first year, looking at the chart of the topics and seeing the curriculum standards for everything except health was empty. It made no sense to me. And it is very broad, and it is fundamental to the lives of our kids, and they need to have that instruction and curriculum development in all of these subjects, some of which have been mentioned. I'm not sure if substance use disorders and the effects of substances were mentioned, but that's one of the heavy ones that kids themselves brought that bill to us last year. And I think we need to listen to our kids and the students who are up here today and hear them, that they want to have this education in their schools, and it should be uniform across the state at some level. And then parents always have local control. They know the curriculum if they're paying attention. If they object, they can take them out. So I'm a strong supporter of the curriculum update. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bierman. Due to time right now, I'm going to go to Chair Jordan, and then we'll go to you for closing comments, Chair Bennett.
I'll be really quick. Members, I would encourage a no vote on this. I'm sure no one is shocked. The very first bill I ever presented as a legislator was an education policy on consent education, because it was something that came up in my very first election, as I heard from women who had all been, at different points in their life, been sexually assaulted or just didn't really know if they had been or not, and they wanted that consent education. And that was something that came up in my first campaign, and it resulted in the very first bill I ever tried to get passed. But I will actually just close with our written testimony. There was a student, Rosanna, who participated on the Health Education Standards Development Committee as one of our three youth members. And they said, as a student and peer educator, I know that all Minnesota students do better when we receive accurate health information and education. Oftentimes, my peers talk about being lucky or unlucky in their health education. Students should not be dependent on luck or zip codes to dictate the education they receive, which is why we should vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. I'll give you the last couple of seconds here, Chair Bennett, for your final comments.
All right, I'm going to take the option as chair to have it be more than just a couple seconds, but I won't be long. So I heard a lot of good things that I believe most of the parents, families, and educators in our state would support. Teaching menstruation, that's basic biology, substance abuse, accurate health care, sexually transmitted disease, the harm of sex trafficking and abuse and all those kinds of things. These are not the controversial areas we are talking about. And these are the kinds of things that rightfully parents and community members would expect their school districts to teach. And that's the benefit of local control. They go to them and they say, hey, we want these things. But I'm going to address the elephant in the room, because we bring this forth to parents and we say we want accurate, developmentally appropriate health education. That sounds wonderful. Who wouldn't support that? But I have the elephant in the room is the sex education components of this. And it's called, what's in our new health standards is comprehensive sex education. And I've taken the time to study it in depth. I've looked at textbooks that other states have who have adopted this. And I'm just going to say some of the areas that they cover, because parents and community throughout the state don't hear this part. They just hear, we need age-appropriate health education. Of course we do. But who gets to decide about masturbation and when to teach that? Because that is in comprehensive sex education. How to. It usually starts around third grade, and that's what they teach kids. Who gets to decide about pornography? In the textbook I read, it said, choosing to view or not view pornography is no different than choosing to have bacon for breakfast or not. We all know that it's incredibly harmful to young people, and yet these are the kinds of things that are pushed. Or you and only you get to decide, telling like a, let's say a fifth or sixth grader, you or only you get to decide when you're going to have sex. That is not appropriate. These are the kinds of things and the values that some people say, hey, that's okay. And others say, no way, I don't want my child presented with this type of material. And that's why it's not my job to force my values down anybody's throats in this room or throughout the state. And it's not your job to shove your values down people's throats either. This should be a local decision. Local people are smart enough, the educators, the parents, and so on, to make the right decisions for their children. And I will leave it right there. I believe this bill, the opt-in, needs to be there so that local communities, local teachers, administrators can decide how they best want to implement, especially these sensitive issues that are based on values, on cultures, and that kind of thing. Our state deserves that. Our parents deserve that. Our schools deserve that. We are going to put principals and superintendents pitted against parents and have huge controversy in some of our local communities if we do this. So let's allow opt-in. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. And with that, the chair moves that House File 3550 be placed on the general register. There was a roll call requested. And the committee legislative assistant will call the roll.
Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Chair Jordan.
No.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Vice Chair Hill.
Hill votes no.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative DePell.
Bell votes yes.
Representative Falconer.
No.
Representative Folkelman.
Yes.
Representative Gordon. Representative Gottfried.
No.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Keeler.
No.
Representative Lawrence.
Lawrence votes aye.
Representative Roach.
Yes.
Okay, with there being seven yeses and seven nays, since there are being fewer than eight yeses necessary for the motion to carry, the motion does not prevail. With that, the chair lays over House File 3550. Thank you, members, so much for the respectful discussion. And I would like to give Chair Jordan just 1 second to be able to say, hey, what's going on for tomorrow, since our next agenda is March 24th. You feel good?
I feel good, Madam Chair.
Fantastic. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 24th, 2026. With that, our... Thank you. 25th, 2026. With that, the committee stands adjourned. Thank you.